This is KUCI 88.9 FM at the University of California, Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access live shows or its podcast by going online at kuci.org. This is In the Garden, a show produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I'm David Letourneau, your DJ for the hour. This week's topic is bountiful blueberries. My guest is Romero Lobo. Welcome, Romero, and let's talk about what you do in the garden. You've been doing a lot of blueberry research projects recently, I think, and that's how we met over at the University of California's Research Center over in Irvine. What got you there, and what's kind of your background? How did this all start?
Thank you, David. As you mentioned, my name is Romero Lobo. I am officially a farm advisor with the University of California and affiliated with the University of California Small Farm Center located out of Davis. As part of our job responsibilities, we do research on crops that are common to the locations where we are. And in this case, blueberries, as you mentioned, is one of the crops that we've been researching over the last several years. It's been, blueberries has been a fascinating story. It's been a crop that, for us involved with the agricultural industry, we wish we had one like every 10 to 20 years just because of the impact that it's had in agriculture statewide. To give you a little bit of history, California, we've had blueberries in California for forever, pretty much. But what we used to grow in the state were the northern-type blueberries, which usually grows well in the northern part of the state, you know, in cooler, right, colder climates. Since the mid-90s, there's been a lot of effort to breed new blueberries that adapt better to warmer climates. And so that's what gave start to what's called southern highbush blueberries, which opened up a lot of opportunities for us to grow them in California. We know blueberries like acidic soil, so initially people used to say there is no way you can grow blueberries in California. But I guess you tell California that they cannot do something and they will prove you wrong. And that's been the story with blueberries. So, again, to give you a little bit of a background, way back in 1998, Manuel Jimenez, which is a colleague of mine located in the Tulare County in the Central Valley, along with Mark Gaskell and then Favor in Ventura and Santa Barbara County, started out playing with blueberries. And at that time, California didn't even factor in as a blueberry-producing state in the USDA agricultural, right, statistics. But today, we've surpassed New Jersey and or Michigan as the number one producer, and we are number one in blueberries grown domestically in the U.S. As part of our initial research, we tried out a number of blueberry varieties that were available and pretty much at about 25 different locations throughout the state just to find varieties that would fit the microclimate. What guided our interest was to do research we did in the market end of things, and we saw a huge gap in the market reports out of the LA wholesale terminal market, that there was a clear market window in mid-April, you know, that that was where the prices were high and the supply were low, and that's sort of the target was to grow blueberries and be ready at the market at that time.
During that window.
During that market window.
Yeah.
There was also a gap in late in the fall, you know, October, November, which is kind of at the tail end of the season. And so we were trying to hit those windows for, you know, trying to find varieties that would produce in those windows. And so with these southern highbush blueberries, there was about 32 varieties that we tested initially. And we found out that to our surprise, we were hitting that window right on without any major modifications to the environments. I should mention that soil amendments were needed because, as you probably know, blueberries like acidic soils, and our soils, right, in the state are very alkaline, so we had to work on the soil before planting anything. But I would say that without any reservation, blueberries have been a great success, both on the commercial end of agriculture, and it's become a great plant for home gardeners as well. And that's... as gratifying because it is, given the health benefits and the popularity of the crop and the prices even at the marketplace, it is great that that homeowners can grow blueberries and that they can really produce blueberries almost year-round in their environment because of different varieties that are available.
It's interesting that you bring that up because I've looking to do citrus planting and trying to overlap with some of the citrus that is grown so that we'll end up with having oranges most of the full year cycle. And I first, you know, I'm astonished by the fact that I'm from Michigan originally. So, you know, that seemed to be, when you look at the climate there, it's rainy, it can be chilly. It just seems like those conditions are so ideal for growing blueberries. But now we're seeing blueberries in the market all the time. I know a lot of it comes from different countries, but I'm astounded to hear that this has actually taken a foothold here in Southern California. So how do you deal with the temperature that requirements, that chill hours that blueberries need? Is that a factor, or have these been modified in a manner that allows...
It is a factor, and when I mentioned Southern High Bush, the fact of the matter is the newer varieties that have come out into the marketplace, the chilling requirement has been less and less. So when you look at the northern type high bush, probably some of those blueberries require chilling into the probably 1,000 hours of chill to produce successfully. And right now we're dealing with varieties that almost grow as evergreen in Southern California with a requirement of 200 to 300 chill hours. So that makes makes them really conducive to be grown in the southern part of the state. And when we talk about chill hours, it is the accumulated number of hours below 40 or right at 40 degree temperatures in a season. So that was part of the early research, looking at varieties that had different chilling requirements. And so we wanted to see which ones did better in different microclimates. Some varieties grew well but didn't bloom or didn't produce fruit. Others, you know, did just wonderfully. I mean, some of them even bloomed too early that became fairly risky for growing because if you were prone to have a late freeze, as it happened in 2007, I think we had a hard freeze with all our fruit on the blueberry plantings across the southern part of the state were set, and then we had a hard freeze on February of 2007, February 18th to be exact, I think, if I remember the date, because our field trials just froze. We all the fruit that we had in our plants was damaged, and once you have the fruit set and it freezes, the fruit just the cells break, and that fruit won't continue growing. It will be considered a loss. If you have flowers, it's okay, and the plants are not damaged. They are cold weather plants, but the fruit set and then exposed to freezing temperature is definitely damaged.
Yeah. So, but that has been overcome. I mean, as far as the temperature issue and chill hours that are necessary. Now, if you're a homeowner though, and home gardener, and you're looking to grow blueberries, what would you suggest to people? Because I know when you plant these bushes, unless you have a plant that's at least 2 years old, maybe 3 years old, you're not going to get much fruit from it. And you might even wait, is my understanding.
That is correct, but not necessarily true. I mean, in our experience, whether in pots or in the soil, we find out that blueberries bloom as soon as they hit the ground.
Right.
As a matter of fact, in our earlier efforts to grow them, we used to recommend people to knock the flowers off in the first year in an effort to grow the root system.
Correct.
But then we realized that, especially in commercial plantings, you're investing a lot of money on a planting, so you want to start recovering your investment as soon as possible. And if you're a homeowner, you know, you want to start enjoying the fruit of your labor as soon as you can, right?
Yeah.
So in our
experience... I don't know if I have that much patience myself.
In our experience, we found out that blueberries are very prolific and very... and they will produce fruit within a year after planting. However, that is if you plant them in the, say, in the fall, which is sort of a, or in the spring, you know, because blueberries, you can put them in the ground in spring or fall or whenever you get them. I mean, our environment is so friendly and so conducive to growing plants year-round that it doesn't really make a difference. But I would say probably a year after you transplant them, spring planting, you may get some flowers in the fall. Winter, you know, fall planting, you may get some flowers in fall and spring. Even if they are little, they will start producing blooms. As a matter of fact, most plantings, most plants that I see at At home garden, the garden stores or nurseries already have flowers in them in the pot. So usually, you know, you plant them and you already have flowers on them. So it's not
a
problem.
Would those be
the critical thing with blueberries for home gardeners and commercial growers is manage the soil pH. And that is something that you gotta work on before planting, because it's going to be an ongoing battle if you don't do that. So what we recommend people is, if you're planting them in a bed in your house, in your backyard, dig out that soil, add as much mulch, coarse mulch as you can, and then amend the soil with some sort of a sulfur, elemental sulfur in a powder form, on a pellet form, and that will help prep the soil and probably work better than if you don't do it. I mean, it definitely work better than not doing anything at the start. The mulch, as it decomposes, it has some acidifying effect on the soil. Plus, blueberries are a very fibrous root system, and they, you know, from the native habitat, they grow on decaying organic matter, so they love that type of an environment.
And I heard, like, pine needle compost is really a good medium to use for
pine bark is definitely the best. Pine bark mulch.
And why is that?
Because it is very acidic.
Okay.
It's more acidic than any other wood that there is out there. But since we don't really have a lumber industry, a timber industry that produces a lot of pine bark here in Southern California, I mean, just about any mulch works well. What we recommend people is, you know, at planting is to blend peat moss with the native soil and the pine bark. And at this time, hopefully, you've amended the soil with sulfur and then sort of blend it all in. And that will buffer the soil environment for blueberries to grow and hit the ground running, as we say.
Okay. And these are bushes. They're going to last you. What? How many years?
Most definitely. I've seen blueberry. Northern type blueberries in the Santa Rosa area that are 60 years old. With the northern type, the big difference here is that those blueberries, northern type blueberries in colder climates, they reach dormancy during the winter months. So they run during the summer and then they rest during the winter. We are not seeing that with the southern high bush blueberries grown in Southern California. And the reason is they are, like I said, they are evergreen. So they don't go, they don't drop their leaves.
Right.
They stay green pretty much year-round. It's been a 1 or 2 years when I've seen a lot of more defoliation in blueberries during the winter months. But for the most part, we don't really know how long a blueberry plant will last in this type of an environment, because the older planting is only about, since 1998, about 18, 20 years old. So that's the big difference. The other aspect of it, which has been a big factor, is that most people want to manage their blueberries like if they lived in Michigan, as you mentioned, or if they lived in Oregon or New Jersey, where they do pruning in the winter. So what I tell people about growing blueberries in their backyard here is to throw away and don't read anything that has to do with blueberries prior to the early 90s, because all the recommendations are going to be based in the northern states. Here, we prune in the summer.
Different climate zone. Yeah.
So we prune in the summer soon after you're done with the harvest. And the productive season, depending on what variety you grow, you're going to start picking blueberries as early as January and then carry on until June. And if you prune, if you have one of the earlier varieties, and if you prune them right after you're done with the last, after you pick the last berry, chances are you may have a crop of blueberries in the fall.
Oh, wow.
So that's how different it is here, as opposed to what it is or what people are used to, you know, from they remember about blueberries in their whatever they are from.
Right. And so that brings us to the next question. How do you recommend pruning? Because I'm hearing you want to take and get rid of some of the old stock to allow the new stock to grow, I'll let you explain.
For your young plants, what you want really is pretty much bunch your plant. That's the plant you get out of the nursery or whatever. Just bunch it and just a flat cut. You know, you want to cut everything up to a certain height that you want it.
So are you leaving about a third of the plant?
I would say probably
intact?
More. Probably leave two-thirds of the plant and remove the top third.
That's what I meant.
Remove the top third and leave the two-thirds below. As your plants grow, the same principle applies to pruning blueberries. As the plant is filling up, you want to create a vase shape, like an inverted funnel shape, And that's kind of the ideal shape. Different varieties, though, would allow you to do that easier than others. For example, there are some varieties of blueberries that are more upright, and that's easy to create a kind of a vase shape.
Right.
Whereas there are others that are low-spreading bushes, which is kind of hard to pick them off the ground, and that's what you should concentrate on. You know, remove the lower branches and start shaping it to train it upright.
So would there be varieties that you try to avoid from that low standpoint? From an agricultural standpoint, I think it would probably you would want the taller type, but...
It depends, and again, it all depends what your ideal, what your goal is. I mean, some of the low spreading bushes, if you train them properly, they are very productive, very productive varieties. So the productivity is what we're looking for in general. And then, I'll expand on this in a little bit. Finish the pruning aspect of it. When you prune, in addition to creating that vase shape, what you're looking for is you cut down your fruiting wood. Whatever wood produced fruit, you remove that, and you cut back to the next strongest shoot that you can find on that branch. So you can be as aggressive as you want, or you can leave more material depending where you find that last strong shoot that you want to keep, because that's what's going to give you fruit the following season.
Right.
So if you want to prune them heavily, you cut back to the shoots, the strongest shoot that is closer to center. By center, I mean the core of the plant. You can remove on the periphery and go back to the strong shoot, and then you have multiple shoots on that one branch, and that's how you approach it. And again, you're just training the shoots that are upright. You remove branches that are crossing, or, you know, branches that are generally weak. On young plants, what you will see is that as the plant grows new shoots, when they take off in the ground, there is like what we call the nursery plant, stays down low in the center of that plant. So in the first year or two, what we recommend is just remove the nursery plant, because that will stay like a really leafy tissue and weak shoots in the center, and the new canes will start growing on the sides of that. So you want to remove that from the center and then start training your plant upright. Back to the varieties. The varieties that...
And I guess as I ask you this, I'm thinking the seasonality of it. Going back to my citrus example, I'd love to have blueberries year-round. I'm not sure if you're going to have that every month, but if I got 8 or 10 months versus just 1 or 2 months, I'd be a happy camper. But does that entail having a multiple varieties?
I was going to suggest that. I mean, the varieties... Depending how much space you have in your backyard, you could potentially have a long blueberry season. Like I said, you start with varieties that are experienced here, and I've named some blueberry varieties that may or may not necessarily be available to backyard growers, because some of these are sort of patented and that they're available in large quantities to wholesale nurseries, but not necessarily to retail nurseries. But in our field experiment here at South Coast Field Station, we're seeing that variety called Snow Chaser, which is up to now one of the earliest varieties. It starts, we start harvesting in mid-January, and then it goes from mid-January till the end of March. And we have two varieties that do that. One is Snow Chaser and Spring High. And then we have other two varieties that picks in and start kind of producing in mid-March and then go until mid to late May. And so if you look at varieties and look at the low chill at early, mid, or late season, you could easily achieve a long productive season on your blueberries.
Right.
Commercial varieties that are fairly early that are being popular among homeowners, you have varieties like a Char Blue that has been out there, has been a really good variety, very vigorous, very productive. Misty is another variety, but these tend to be more in the mid-season type.
Well,
and so you can achieve that. And the other aspect, I'm sorry, if you prune, so pruning and variety can allow you to achieve that year-round production. So and that, again, is will be very specific to your own microclimate, which is one of the uniqueness about California. You cannot make a recommendation that would apply more than a mile radius from when you're basing that recommendation on, because of different patterns of topography or
temperatures.
Yeah, temperature and everything else that comes into play.
Do most of the, when you go to these nurseries to buy blueberry bushes, do they give you a kind of an idea that, as to well, Chill always, I'm assuming, you would assume most of these big box stores would mm-hmm. have appropriate blueberry plants for this area. Mm-hmm. But is there, are they suggesting, like, well, this, you'll be able to expect fruit in January or January to March or whatever it might be. I mean, does it get that much detailed, or do you have to go to another resource, or can you recommend a resource that might be?
I don't think they will be that specific because, again, the different blueberries will behave differently depending where you are. We are finding out that, like, we had early on, we had a trial right on the coast in a very coastal area, and then some other trials inland, and we found out that as we moved inland, the season for the same variety changes.
Okay.
For example, we had a variety that would, just to give you an idea, a variety on the coast would be started fruiting or harvesting in February 1st. Inland, in the inland valleys, we would be harvesting February 15, and then if we're farther inland we go, say into the mountain ranges in San Diego County or Valley Center, we would be picking pretty much a month later. So, again, it depends where you are. What we're looking in general is at the chilaours. And the risk is you don't want to buy a variety, depending on your microclimate, you don't want to buy a variety that is very low chilaours because it may, or weather patterns change so drastically right. that we have a warm wave in the winter, your plants will think it's spring and they'll bloom, and then we revert back to winter and you may have a hard freeze and then you lose your crop. This is what I was telling you earlier. So you want to find, if you're prone to freeze where you are, probably the safest way to buy like a mid-season variety and not necessarily a very early variety.
Okay.
Just
okay.
To kind of a hedge your you know, minimize the risk of losing your crop that way.
Right. What about pollination? Are you concerned with that?
No, not at all. Blueberries, for the most part, are self-pollinating. We do recommend to have to put them in sets of two different varieties that are early. That way, cross-pollination helps, but it's not necessary.
Right.
So if you have multiple sets of variety, put two varieties, two different varieties, let's say two early varieties, two mid-season varieties, and two late-season varieties, and then that way you get, you know, one that cross-pollinate the other. The other aspect is that as similar as they are, each variety has a different taste. And when you have different varieties and you taste them, one of the things that I tell people is, maybe because I have plenty of blueberries, you know, since I started researching them, I tell people is you never eat blueberries one at a time.
True.
So you got to eat two or three at a time because they you usually find them at different maturity rates when you harvest them and or a blend of varieties, and they stimulate your palate a lot better than just eating one at a time. You have multiple expressions of flavor, and it changes the eating experience when you do it that way.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I've been to the store, and it's just blueberries. There isn't Storm Chaser. There isn't these other different identifying types. So I often wonder what happened there? You know, that they don't specialize in just having one varietal.
There is a number of reasons for that,
and related to that,
I'll mention that a colleague of mine, Manuel Jimenez, looked at the blueberries are called by the U.S. Blueberry Council the Blue Dynamos, meaning it is considered a superfruit, and it's been. Well documented that they have high antioxidant activity, right? As you would suspect, different varieties would have different levels of antioxidant activity. So at one point, we started suggesting, why don't we promote blueberries with higher antioxidant activity? But then, on the commercial end of things, some growers that did not have varieties that were higher on the antioxidant activity, they were saying, what's going to happen to us? Then we're going to be placed at a disadvantage because only people are going to start buying the higher antioxidant activity blueberries. So that's why, by consensus industry-wide, they decided to market blueberries without necessarily identifying the antioxidant activity in them.
Right.
And flavor is the same. When it comes to flavor, it's like any other fruit. You know, some people will prefer a fruit because it is either sweeter, more tart, or more acidic, or what have you. So it's hard to emphasize or promote a flavor when there are so many flavor differences. And so that's why when we suggest, and again, it's sort of a joke, but it is true, you know. I mean, with blueberries, it's a fruit so small that you can afford to put two or three or four or a handful in your mouth, depending how plentiful they are.
And the taste experience
is going to be different,
right,
as if you eat, you know, one at a time of different varieties. The other thing is what you find in the marketplace, typically, it's a blend of varieties. Usually, most growers will have two or three varieties going at the same time on a commercial scale. I mean, and it has to do with what we talked about earlier, you know, the cross-pollination aspect,
right,
and the fact that they consolidate from multiple fields, especially larger growers. They will grow a number of different varieties that are sort of compatible or synchronized in terms of the seasonality.
Yes. Sure.
And depending on the season, you will find that a lot of our blueberries are imported and usually have been in cold storage for a significant amount of days.
And that cold storage does affect the flavor.
It does affect the flavor, yes. And, it depends who you ask. I mean, I was talking to some importers, and they tell me that they've developed technology, or they mentioned that they've developed technologies that allow them to bring blueberries from Chile, and that takes about 17 days to Miami or 21 days to L.A., and in addition to that, they put them in cold storage for 60 additional days, and they argue that they will taste as fresh as you pick them the day before. I'm assuming from a fruit shelf life perspective, yeah, the fruit is okay, but something has got to give. I mean, we're talking about a fruit that no matter how you control the environment, the flavor is going to be off a little bit to a certain extent. And what we're finding more common is that they lose the crunch. I mean, they are not as crisp. They tend to be a little bit leathery on the skin, and it has to do probably with storage. When you eat a fresh blueberry, I mean, the snap is part of what makes them really interesting. It enhances the experience, yeah.
And probably activates your taste buds.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
That's interesting. I always wonder. You know, but the bottom line is it's going to taste better out of your backyard.
Most definitely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're able to pick them and choose them, it's just one of those things.
No question about it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the reward of just being able to relax and go out there and feel like you've accomplished something, and then you get this great reward of these wonderful blueberries.
No question about it. And, I mean, a blueberry bush, you know, the higher end of the production scale would probably give you anywhere, you know, 6 pounds, you know, when a mature plant. But if you spread that over several months, you know, or a couple months, you know, you get a handful that are enough to eat with your cereal to make a shake on a daily basis. I think that's very rewarding.
Yeah.
So it is the pleasure of growing your own plants.
It's true. We're going to have to take a little bit of a short station break to let you know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine and KUCI.org online. This is In the Garden, show produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I'm David Letourneau, your host, and we're back with Romero Lobo and talking about blueberries. So what do you think about container gardening for blueberries? I mean, you know, we have a lot of people that think because I live in an apartment, I have a small balcony or a small area, I can't do as much as someone with a huge backyard. But in a lot of cases, with vertical gardens that are now becoming popular, people can do some gardening there. But I think even these as a blueberry bush, if you look at it from that perspective, it gives you a lot of latitude.
I think blueberries is one of those plants that lends very well to be grown in pots, both as a backyard plant or on commercial scales. And as part of my recent research, that's what was one of the aspects that I was looking at, you know, looking at trying to get familiar with growing blueberries in pots. And they've been, they adapt really well. With one of the things that we compare was because of the root system on blueberries, we compare like tall pots. This is 15-gallon pots, which I think is ideal size for growing blueberries in container. If you want to put them in a bigger pot, it is fine as well. I've seen people growing them in whiskey barrels, and they work really well. And we suggest that if you're using a 15-gallon pot, you go with the shorter, wider pot as opposed to the taller pot or the avocado pot that you see commonly right. in nurseries and garden centers.
So about a 12-inch depth or maybe 18-inch?
It is about 18 inches okay. and about that wide as well. About the width is about
so
18 to 24 inches. Yeah.
Or 24, okay.
Excuse me. And so the reason we suggest that is that blueberries have a shallow and fibrous root, so that gives them a little bit more room to expand. And okay. And the roots grow sideways as opposed to being contained and just forced to go deep because they don't necessarily do that. The narrower the container or the smaller the container, the roots are going to grow in circles, and then they're going to get root-bound, and you're not going to get the water penetration,
right.
and they are going to collapse eventually. So, matter of fact, one of the things that we recommend people when they buy them is if you get a blueberry plant out of the nursery, oftentimes we don't know how long that plant has been in that one-gallon container. So what we tell people is to pull the plant out of the gallon and then rip the root system apart. Rip it. And sometimes you can rip chunks out of it and then break it up so that when you put it in a bigger container, you repot it or transplant it to the soil, you have that root system spread out and
right.
then the roots will grow in different directions and not follow the same pattern that they have been used to in that
container.
One pot. Yeah.
Because they do follow that pattern. I mean, I've got tomato plants that I'm thinking, oh, I didn't twist them enough.
Yeah.
Put them in, and they're not prospering.
And early on, that was one of the single biggest reason why blueberry plants, excuse me, would collapse soon after transplant because they would choke. They wouldn't absorb any water. Water wouldn't get into the root system.
So you just see stunted growth at that point. You don't see any vigorous activity that would cause
that is it. Correct. And blueberries, is in our experience, are a very interesting plant because they don't necessarily wilt. If you have a tomato plant that is lacking water, you will see that it starts drooping, and it will
right.
tell you, hey, I'm thirsty. Give me some water. But blueberries in general, they will, because of the woody nature of the plant, they won't wilt. I mean, you will see the leaves drying up, and you will see them just falling off, but
right.
They won't tell you that they need water until it is perhaps a little late that you start noticing.
Because it's like an evergreen plant?
I couldn't explain why. It's just the composition of the leaves, I think, are harder and more cellulose, you know, stronger leaves and stronger canes than a tomato plant is.
Right.
So, it's, like I said, it's woodier. You know, the whole structure of the plants is woodier,
true.
And you don't see them wilting
stress
like you will
much.
See any other, you know, vegetable plants.
How about pests? I mean, what kind of pests do you have to be concerned with? And then, well, let's talk about pests first.
On the pest side, blueberries have been a great crop to work with. One of the reasons is I'm not necessarily inclined to deal with pesticides myself.
Correct.
And so I've been lucky enough that the crops that I've researched don't necessarily require, mainly because they are new to the state, they don't require there aren't a lot of chemical products available to treat them. But for the most part, blueberries have been very clean. It's been a very clean crop. The biggest problem we've had is whiteflies. You know,
okay.
usually we've had a few, but it's been variety dependent. We've had whiteflies infest some varieties really badly. And all we did at the time really was spray them with high-pressure water and knock the whiteflies off the plants, clean them up, and that was fine. Lately, there's been a fruit fly that affects blueberries in Southern California in commercial settings. We've been lucky enough not to have them in our field trials, and part of the reason is, as a matter of fact, that this morning we were having a conversation with one of my colleagues, and we like to think that it is because we harvest blueberries so early in the season that the degree days have not accumulated enough for the fruit fly to develop and infect our fruit. But it is pretty much the only problem with blueberries because there is a fruit fly that will lay eggs on the fruit
right.
and as it develops, and then you will find a tiny little maggot at times, but we haven't really had that problem here in the state. It is a problem with other soft fruits like blackberries and raspberries, but we haven't had to deal with that.
Is there potential for people? I mean, it sounds like right now these plants are pretty immune to any diseases that we currently have here in Southern California, but What about people bringing plants in from out of state? Another blueberry plant. Is there some type of disease or pest that would...
Before I answer that, I'll make a comment that is very encouraging. In all of our blueberry plantings, we've never lost a plant to gophers, which gopher seems to be a major problem in Southern California, but gophers don't like them, and that is a big plus. You don't have to grow them in gopher baskets. We haven't really lost a plant to gophers. Now, back to your question on the source of plants.
I have a question for you real quick. Could I use that as a barrier for gophers?
if there is a plant that gophers like beyond your blueberry fence, if you will, they'll find it.
Yeah. Okay.
But we assume the reason they don't like blueberries is because the root system is so fibrous that there isn't like a taproot that they can go for.
Okay.
And so they have to work really hard at eating, you know, fine roots before they
get a meal.
So they'll go somewhere else. Because we've seen gopher mounds in our blueberry plantings, but we've never lost one plant to gopher. As far as sources for plants, I would say that for the most part, most of the blueberry plants we grow in California are imported from other states. And there are no endemic diseases that come with them. I mean, the soil has been a tricky part to bring into the state, but usually these are grown in potting media that's been sterilized, and it's commercial type. It's not native soils to say that they will bring nematodes or other disease pathogens like that. So that's never been an issue. I mean, our plants that we have here at the station came in from a nursery in Oregon.
Right.
In the past, we bought plants from nurseries in Michigan and also North Carolina, which were the only pretty much nurseries that had plants available for us to grow.
But I would imagine they're pretty vigilant about making sure, because that could destroy their business. I guess the concern I would have or think about, and I think it sounds like we're pretty well immune to this, short of someone who's visiting their family back in Michigan or Maine and they see a plant they want to bring back in. We have this with other types of plants.
With blueberries, again, the risk is minimal, but that is a very important point as you travel the world. The main reason is that, as you probably seen the news or heard the news, Southern California, we deal with plant quarantines or pest quarantines almost on a yearly basis.
Right.
And there is a direct relationship with the multicultural nature of our cities. I mean, if you look at the LA Basin, it is people from very much all over the world. Same thing with San Diego County and Orange County. So part of the challenge is that, and usually all of these exotic or new pest outbreaks we see happening more in urban areas than they happen in agricultural areas.
Right, right.
And part of the reason we suspect is that it is residents or people from different countries who travel get nostalgic about missing a fruit from their native land, and then they bring either pieces of cuttings or seeds or even fruit, you know, the actual fruit, usually smuggle it into the country, and then they dispose of the seeds or peels or what have you, and that's how some of these disease or pest outbreaks start. So in terms of I like to tell people that not to do it. I know it's hard because usually when we travel to our native lands, or native countries, there's always a relative who stays behind and always asks, you know, bring me this, bring me that. But we tell people not to do it unless it is on a cooked form, because there is a risk for bringing pests. And California agriculture is too valuable for any of us to risk it. I mean, we're talking about a $26 billion industry statewide. Who can be put at risk because somebody wants to eat a guava or a mango or what have you from their native country?
Right.
I think we should be more careful and somewhat probably more responsible in that regard and think beyond our own selves in protect our agricultural industry, because too many lives depend on it.
And I think people kind of, it's like, what's the big deal? It's just, even if you bring an orange in, that is creating a vulnerability for our system. And we've actually, had someone who brought in a citrus plant that was infected, and it's had a devastating effect on the citrus industry from an urban homeowner, basically.
Most definitely. And the challenge is that a lot of government resources are dedicated to this. I mean, the social cost of dealing with these exotic pest outbreaks, I think, are enormous. And probably, if you ask me, there are better ways to spend government money than to dealing with an exotic pest and that we may never control and which may also put the agricultural industry at risk. But back to your question, you made a comment about blueberry plants being immune to pests and diseases. And there is a saying out there that I saw on a truck or somewhere as I was driving the freeways of the state here. And there was a sign that says, diamonds are forever, but disease resistance is not. So we can never say that we are immune to anything because we never know. The culture and the plant systems and different ecosystems are so dynamic that the plant may be free of disease or pest today, but that can change in a minute because of the reasons that we were just talking about. You know, the influx of exotic pests and the fact that some of these plants are new to an area, so pests don't know. It wasn't originally in their diet, but if they find
it,
then they start liking it.
Yeah.
With blueberries, the biggest pest problem we've had is birds. They love them as much as we do.
And what do you do to counter that? I know the answer to this, but I just...
Well, there are a lot of deterrents that people use. I mean, we've seen from people flying, you know, hanging CDs, and I guess the reflective nature of the CDs deter birds. There is some reflective tape that is being used.
Right.
And on the CDs, I guess you have to play with, I don't know if the kind of music that the CD plays make a difference, but we find that they those techniques usually don't work. Scare tactics don't necessarily work. They get used to them, and they will just go to them. There are artificial noisemakers that emulate the sound of predatory birds, you know, like hawks or whatever, you know, what other birds are out there, and then they are put out there in the field. I've seen people use that. For us, what's been most effective is netting. You know, you can get a piece of netting hung over the top of your blueberries, and you can create a structure fairly easy with that.
But
it depends on your location as well, because what we're finding out if there aren't any taller trees for birds to perch on, then you know birds are not necessarily a problem. And if you have plenty of blueberries, you know, I mean, they will have some, and you can
get
have
to share some
as well.
With
yeah. So it can be a problem, but it's not necessarily a big issue.
Now, I seem to remember you guys had an issue this past year with netting that got blown off, and it got to be a little bit of a problem or challenge in trying to replace it. Did you lose a lot because that netting was missing, or did it affect your yield at the same time?
A combination of things, but yes. This year, our research project was heavily impacted by the fact that we did not have a netting. But it had a lot to do with the rains as well, because our blueberry, this is no chaser variety. As I told you, we started picking very early, kind of mid-January, and because of so much rain we had during the early part of the year, we couldn't get on the field. And a windstorm in last fall had pretty much our netting is permanently over the top of our blueberry plantings. So the wind ripped it, and we just had to redo the whole structure and didn't have time to put it up on time before our harvest. So, yeah, we did lose our harvest data on the snow chaser variety this season because of that and because of bird damage. I mean, by the time we were ready to start, the birds had already eaten most of them.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of a...
Do raccoons like these?
Not in our experience.
Okay.
No. We see other, like, what we see here is rodents, like I said. Rabbits may, or even coyotes, if you're prone to in a coyote area, they will chew up your irrigation lines or what have you, but not necessarily feed on the plants.
Right.
We haven't seen any vertebrate pest damage on blueberry plants yet. Other than birds eating the
birds. Birds and humans.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned watering. Irrigation-wise, is any suggestions on how frequently you should be watering blueberry plants or... Do you need more as they're blooming and fruiting? And
well, mind you, blueberries come from very wet areas, you know, areas with high precipitation. So part of the work we're doing right now is trying to fine-tune the irrigation requirements of blueberries for commercial production. But because of the fibrous root system they have, I would say that blueberries benefit more from shorter, frequent irrigation intervals. Water less, more frequently, as opposed to water in larger amounts, you know, less frequently. So I would probably say if you can put 2 gallons every other day, a gallon per plant, per mature plant, that would probably be enough, as opposed to put in 10 gallons on Saturdays when you're home.
Right.
So I would say spread the amount of water you apply them over 2 or 3 applications, and that will probably be better, just because of the shallower root system they have. That way you keep your root system moist. The other thing we encourage is to put a layer of mulch to try to hold that moisture in as well. I mean, you can put as much mulch as you can. The coarser, the better. That way, right. You know, as it decomposes, it's also, as it humifies, you know, you get that acidification effect.
I'm always amazed at the temperature variation with having mulch at the base of a plant. And maybe in some ways, does this encourage that kind of environment that they've come from in the past as far
most,
as?
Most definitely. I mean, it's cooler. Again, it's the decaying organic matter. It keeps the moisture in. So the root system are, you know, the feeder roots are, for most plants, are very weak. So the looser, the cooler, the less stressed they are, the better they're going to work in terms of taking up nutrients.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Is there anything else that you can think of that we might tell folks about at home that would help them to make growing blueberries an easier?
One of the things that we're seeing is because of what we discussed earlier about people not taking care of the pH of the soil prior to planting, one of the corrective measures that we recommend is to use iron chelates, you know, as a quick fix. And what we do is you dissolve 1 gallon, one spoonful of iron chelates and in a gallon of water, and then just drench your plants, I mean the root zone, and that usually brings them back. You start seeing, normally blueberry plants will start turning color in the fall because they are deciduous, you know, they will start kind of getting a reddish tone to them, right. to the foliage. But if you're seeing your plants getting that reddish tone in the spring, that is an indication that your soil pH is getting too high. So reddish color on your foliage is fine in the fall, but if you're thirsting in the spring and summer, that is telling you that
it's time to
do something about the soil pH, and that's when we recommend to apply the iron chelates, dissolving water.
Yeah, and I always think that there's a sensitivity with the pH level on blueberries, the soil aspect of it. Is there an easy way to measure that pH?
Yeah, definitely. There are some kits that allow you to get a quick idea of pH, even what you use for swimming pools, I think sometimes may even work. But there are some disposable kits that you can buy and then get an idea of the pH. You don't really have to get it down to the exact
science
decimal, but, yeah. If blueberries like acidic soil. So the closer to 4 you are, the better off you are. But if you see your pH creeping over 6, that they will start telling you. And so try to keep it between 4 and 5, and then that should be okay.
But you'll see that color variation.
Yeah,
that
for the most part,
this
is across varieties. They will start turning sort of a reddish color in the foliage. And that's where this type, I mean, you don't want to get there. Hopefully you will catch it before you will stay on top of it so that you never get to that point. Because it does affect the intake of all nutrients, you know, and that's just a chance.
I think it's a fairly simple, if you want to get into that technical aspect of it, it isn't that difficult to do.
No, not at all.
And it just gives you a handle to keep moving forward with these.
And the other thing is amend your soil. Like I said, you know, top dress your mulch on a yearly basis because it's, you know, it decomposes, it settles in, and if you stay on top of the mulch, chances are you may not need to use any other corrective measures, but again,
mulching really enhances your soil.
Oh, most definitely.
Long term, You know, it's one of those things. It's like a spoonful of sugar, maybe.
And for a few, you know, we were talking about pine bark mulch earlier. I mean, it is available at garden stores. So if you can buy it, I mean, depending how many plants or how large an area you have, you know, you can buy a bag and just use it, or and that'll definitely help even more with the acidification of your soil.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, we're getting close to the end of our hour here. This week's topic has been bountiful blueberries. My guest has been Romero Lobo, and he is a farm lab advisor, or small farm advisor. Do I have that right?
That is farm advisor.
Farm advisor. Yeah. Okay. And when, you know, I'm sorry, we didn't touch on this earlier. Just real quick, what small farm advisors, what is there a certain size that you deal with farmers, or?
5 feet and under.
Five.
No, just, I'm sorry.
5 feet
was,
and under?
That is...
We like them to look at the roots.
No, the official title is, we used to be small farm advisors, mainly because we used to be affiliated with the UC, University of California, small farm program.
Okay.
But that program was pretty much discontinued or dismantled a few years ago, so right now we are just farm advisor. What you find within the, and we have a presence, as UC farm advisors, we are part of the UC Division of Agriculture and Natural Resources, and we have a presence in just about every county in the state. And what we do is we support the agricultural industry or home gardeners in the counties where we are located. So we all attach, we all come at this with different expertise,
right,
and sort of evolve based on the needs of the county or the region that we are in.
Right, right. Well, great. We kind of reached the end of our show here, but before we end, is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners that you can think of?
No, just to keep growing fruits. We are doing our best to develop information, whether it is through our conventional commercial research approaches. We try to adapt that information to support him. But the work that you guys do as master gardeners makes a big difference in terms of helping out backyard growers. And in my own research now, I'm incorporating the home gardener also as part of my clientele, or trying to develop and research techniques that work with them. That's why the crops that I work with now, we're talking about blueberries, but as I other crop research work that I'm doing involves dragon fruit or pitahaya,
right.
And most recently we've taken on looking at coffee as a potential research crop. So those crops lend very well to being grown on a commercial scale, and also are wonderful house plants or backyard plants. So for the future, that maybe those may be some other topics that we touch on, and I'd love to talk to you and try to share some of the information we have on those crops to our own home gardeners.
That's great. This has been a pleasure having you here today.
It's been for me as well.
So we are at the close of our show, In the Garden. I'd like to thank Romero Lobo for being here with us and discussing blueberries and the different... to me, it seems like it's a very easy, ironclad plant that you can't really mess up with, and has some great benefits.
I would agree with that, and that's part of the reason I chose them, because they are hard to kill. As all the crops that I mentioned, they're really hard to kill, and that's part of the reason I'm doing research with them. Because one of the things that I do, and the line of work that we do, we don't talk to our plants. You know, we neglect them equally. So we don't discriminate in that regard.
That's
and
true.
So growing plants that die very easily is not necessarily something that I want to do. Blueberries have been a wonderful crop, like I mentioned, a great plant to have at home to grow your own berries. And it's been a great crop to have on a commercial scale for the benefit of California agriculture as well.
Well, we're appreciative of your effort and your work in this field of research, as well as taking the time to tell folks about what they can do regarding growing blueberries. So thank you for listening to KUCI 88.9. This has been In the Garden. And we appreciate you listening.